I grew up in Vacaville, California. That's about 7.5 hours north of here. And Vacaville is this quaint little sleepy bedroom town, and it's surrounded by a lot of mountains. And the nice part about it is we always ended up having very mild weather almost all year round. And I'll never forget the one time that we were getting ready. It was in the winter time, and out of nowhere, it started snowing. Now, did anyone feel the exact same way for us when all of a sudden it starts? Now, I know, it's Grapple. I know it's a different name. I get it. I'm calling it snow because we're not going to get anything like that for the next 3,000 years. So we might as well take the snow when it shows up. Of course, we're also watching, as we had the news turned on this morning, our hearts and prayers go out to all those in the mountain communities right now, especially Big Bear and Lake Arrowhead. They have so much snow, and people are running out of food. They're running out of gasoline for their generators, running out of propane. So I know that it's really hard. We're going to be talking about storms today, too, and it'll be very interesting to see the storm that happens here is something that we would understand a little bit more, especially not with winter storms, but probably more in line with Santa Ana winds. So we're going to read the story. If you do not know this story, this is going to be a great day for you because you're going to be able to hear it and learn it and not have any preconceived baggage to go along with it. If you have heard it, like myself, who's not only heard it but preached it, I dug deep into some stuff and I found some very interesting things. Which is why, and I'll explain to you later why I titled the sermon the way I did. So Mark chapter 4, we're on verse 35. That day when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." Now, not to belabor anything, but already we're starting the conflict. Because going to the other side was meaning that you were going into enemy territory. Does anyone know what happens to be on the other side? I mean, you can take a peek at chapter 5 and realize where they're actually landing. Do you know where they're headed? They're headed to an area. It's either known as the Gadarene, or it's the Gad region or the Gerasene region. So we have either the Gadarene demoniac or the Gerasene demoniac, depending upon how you do it. They're going into an area where there are no Jewish people. In fact, we're going to experience this whole story all about pigs. And we're like, why are there pigs in the land of Israel? Well, we're not in the land of Israel no more. We're in a foreign land, especially to them. So they would look out at their lake. I know it's called the Sea of Galilee, but it's a little bit more sized and shaped like a lake, a very large lake. And as they would look across the lake and they would see that other side, they would know that's where the enemy lives. We don't go over there. We don't engage with them. We don't talk with them. They are people that are not like us. And so we don't ever head that way, which is why it's very interesting. Why that information is important is because the storm that is about to hit is a storm that happens while the disciples are in the will of God. So there are times that you're going to have storms in your life, and it's because you have made some very poor choices, and all of a sudden things are happening around you because of mistakes that you've made. Now that's a great sermon and a great story for another time. But this will be more specifically geared towards people who are in the will of God, following God, doing all that they can. Even when God says, hey, we're going to go over to the other side. Hey, we're going to go reach out to those people. Hey, you're going to go sit next to that student who doesn't have a friend. Hey, you're going to help out this coworker who looks really lonely in the lunchroom. Hey, you're going to go visit this neighbor who is totally weird and crazy. My neighbors are awesome, by the way. I love them dearly. I said, my neighbors are awesome and I love them dearly. I think she doesn't feel the same way. Yeah, she's like, sure, yeah. So when God says to go do something that's maybe out of your comfort zone, maybe you're going to go on a mission trip, maybe you're going to go into the ministry, maybe you're going to start tithing, maybe you're going to work for the homeless. There's lots of things that God calls us to do, and when he calls us to do it and we do it, oftentimes what we expect are sunny skies, with birds chirping and rainbows forming, going, this is going to be wonderful and easy and lovely, and it's going to be amazing. But that is not what happens here. God is asking them to go to the other side, to an area that they're not too certain about. And it's very interesting why he wants to go do that. Is it going to be for a massive revival that on the other side there's going to be thousands of people waiting for him, about to cheer him on? Is he going over there because there are Israelites that have wandered over in that area and they need ministry and help? You'll be surprised why he goes over there. But for the disciples, they're going over into an area they do not want to go over, but they do it. They obey God. So they hop in the boat, and I did a deep dive and didn't get very far, but that's okay. What do you imagine when it says they got into a boat? What is your view of the boat? Like, what do you picture? Small. Like, how many people does your boat sit? How many does it sit?
Okay, about 10.
About 10? Okay, all right. Yeah. What else do you think? Yeah, we're going to hope at least 13 because it's Jesus and the 12 disciples. But it's very interesting. I read a lot of articles where they said, Mark mentions that there's other boats around, and so one of them hypothesizes that it's multiple boats. In fact, I watched a 9-minute cartoon all about Jesus, and the boat that they had, that they say would only hold 3 people. And so 4 to 5 boats are all rowing across the lake. All right, what else? What else do you think of? Does anyone think any bigger Titanic portions? No? No? Yeah. Yeah. Does it have sails? Very well could be. A lot of the fishing boats had sails, especially if you're going to get to the other side of the lake. You could row it. You could sail it. And it would take, based on my best estimates with like all these people saying how long it takes to get over, about 2 hours. So it could have sails. Some of the fishing boats were larger. We maybe could seat 20 to 30 people in them. Some of them were smaller. If you Google this, you can. Google Jesus boat. And they have actually uncovered in the Sea of Galilee, when the water line was super duper low, a boat showed up. And they were like, well, this is weird. So they did a bunch of carbon dating on it. They found out that it dated exactly to the time where Jesus would have walked the earth. And so they're not saying that this is the boat that Jesus was in, though I'm sure if they did, they'd make a lot of money. They could sell it off for scraps, but it's in a museum. You can actually look at it. And that one, I don't know, it's like 10 to 13. It looks like, it doesn't look very impressive. It's about 27 feet long. It's about this high, it looks like. I think we have a hard time when we think of the size of the boat. I think we can maybe come up with a couple of things. I don't think it's multiple boats. I think all the disciples are in one boat. But then you're going to find out what's very interesting with how these details help us picture what's going on. So we're going to go to the other side, verse 36. This has such a weird phrase. Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. Took him along just as he was? Was he something else like beforehand? Like, well, Jesus, you know, you're not glowing today, but that's okay. We'll still take you into the boat with us. What does it mean they took him just as he was? Yeah, was he just like, but why put it in there? Like, why did they just say, and Jesus got on the boat? Wouldn't that be a more simple phrase? Why just as he was? You're not wearing that on the boat, are you, Jesus? That could be dangerous. Yeah, Rich. I don't think so. No, I don't think they have any special sailor outfits. Maybe that was the thing. He didn't have like a captain's hat. Like maybe he needed one of those things that you see at Newport Beach. You know, you can put on the captain's. No. Maybe it was probably, you know what I heard? This was an interesting one, and I don't know if I believe it, but it could possibly work in the text. Some people believe he's already asleep. So, you know, they get in the boat, and they took Jesus just as he was, zonked out. Now, who here can just sleep anywhere? You, oh, I I despise you with a fiery passion, right? I mean, when I had to take overseas trips and we get on the plane, yeah, forget about it. I am awake the whole time. I'm playing Candy Crush or Word Cookies. My brain's going. I think I'm just about to fall asleep when all of a sudden the person behind me kicks the seat. I'm now wide awake again. I can't fall asleep except in one location, and that is my bed at home. If I take trips out and do conferences, first night, doesn't matter. I'm going to be awake the whole night because I'm not in my bed, and it feels weird, and I don't like it. Jesus apparently has the gift of being able to fall asleep at a moment's notice. Now, this is an interesting thing because it is the... Yeah, oh yes, Marcella? Why can't he still be standing, still preaching? Maybe it's one of those, Sound of Music things, like so long, farewell, as they're going out, and he's still preaching, God loves you, and they just, move. I have no idea. But I love coming up with weird, wacky theories because I think it's great. One of the reasons why we think that it's not that he's sleeping is Luke records that they set off, and then on the journey, Jesus fell asleep. So it appears that Luke, but again, we don't get too bogged down in the details too much. But yeah, maybe he was still in the middle of preaching and the disciples were like, look, Jesus, we got to get going. Like, it's getting late. Jesus, oh my gosh. Let's see what happens. So first of all, just as he was in the boat, there were other boats with him. That's what some people believe means that there's four or five in this caravan. I believe that simply just to mean there were other boats on the lake at the same time. What this is highlighting is that the storm that is about to break is unforeseen, which again sharpens our applications just a little bit more, right? They're in the will of God. They're doing what he asked. And there's absolutely no way to know what's coming. Now, sometimes we do know storms that are coming. We can see storms brewing on the horizon. We can look and we can feel the wind starting to blow, and we can see the clouds rolling in, and so we can brace ourselves. You know, when you have a parent who is aging and they're getting older and older, and as they get older and older, they eventually go on to hospice care, and as they're on hospice care, the storm is coming, but it's a storm you can see. You're bracing for it. You're getting ready for it. The year is quickly going by, and all of a sudden you're like, I'm about to graduate from college, and I have no idea what I'm going to do afterwards. That's a storm that you can actually see coming. You're looking at your finances, and you're realizing, I don't know if I have enough to make it to the end of the month. That's a storm that is foreseeable. You can see the clouds coming in. You can brace yourself. This particular storm that's going to hit is one that they could not prepare for. There's other boats out on the water with them. Verse 37, a furious squall came up and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. I don't know who the NIV translators are that said, hey, let's break out a thesaurus. We don't really use squall that much anymore, right? Or should I start using that more? I should start using squall. But does anyone know what a squall actually is? I had to look it up, so don't feel bad if you didn't know. Like, I'm like, squall? What's a squall? A small storm, but it has a very important feature to it. What? I didn't hear it. It's on the water and lots of wind. So it's a wind storm on the water. It's a furious squall. it's a very angry squall. It didn't have good sleep the night before. Yes, Chris. Did they call them squalls? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because it's not a we think of sea and it's something big, but this is only about 8 by 4 miles, I believe. It's not a massive thing. And I know I looked all the stats. I have never been there. So what I hear from people who have been there is, yes, the Sea of Galilee is actually about 700 feet below sea level. You guys were just there. 700 feet below sea level, and the mountains, when the air comes rushing down the mountains, kind of like here, and we call them Santa Ana winds, their cold air then settles on the hot, humid air, and boom, storms pop up. And that's what I hear. It'll be nice and calm, and then boom, this thing hits. So if I were going to change the translation, I would actually call it, it's a mega windstorm. That would be a more literal translation. The Greek is actually megala. I wonder what megala means. Megala means large. Here they, furious. So it's a furious squall. But it specifically says windstorm. So, and that's where I wish it would have used the word wind for the sole purpose of what's going to happen in these next couple of verses. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. And also, it's really funny because it doesn't say nearly swamped. It says the waves broke over the boat until it was filled. So we're not talking. Now, again, I wish I knew some of the mechanics because here I'm totally confused. Wait, what? What? Oh, you're just kibitzing over there? Okay. So that I wish I understood because it's swamping the boat. It's filling it up. And do you guys know what's happening? Where's Jesus? Well, I know, but how is he sleeping? Is he wet? Can people actually sleep when they're wet? It does happen. It does happen. There is a child. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Heather and I, we often took our boys camping, and one time we were camping on the beach, and we were with some other friends, the Metcalfs, and while we were sleeping, a furious squall broke over the camp, but it wasn't a windstorm, it was a rainstorm, and I don't know how we did it. It was like magic for Heather and I. We literally put the tent right where all the water would rush. I don't know how I'm a Boy Scout. Like, how did I miss that this is where all the water is going to go? And so, it's going on. So I'm up, and I'm underneath actual shelter. Heather's up, and we're talking about it's time to bail. We can't do this anymore. I can't sleep. We're all soaking wet. And then we look around, and we're like, where's Jacob? And so we're like, I think he's still in the tent. So I go over to the tent. It's pouring down rain. There's rivers rushing through. And I unzip it. His air mattress had deflated. And he was literally in, like, water. He was sound asleep. I wish I could do that. I wish I had that ability. But that seems to be, Jesus is... Is he's got to be a little, because some people say it's like a double-decker type thing. I don't know if it's a double-decker, because wouldn't he drown then? Like, he's got to be on the upper level so that when it's nearly swamped, it's still floating, but and Jesus is still asleep. Oh my gosh. Jesus sleeps on waterbeds. That's the title of the sermon. So Jesus was in the stern. Again, that's an interesting detail. Why? Sleeping on a cushion. And it uses a word that is only used once in all of Scripture, and it's here. And as best as we think it is a sandbag used for ballast. So Jesus is sleeping in water with a bag of sand for his pillow. And he is asleep. Interesting tidbit, if you like interesting factoids. This is the only time in all of Scripture you will ever see Jesus sleeping. I'm sure Jesus slept other times, but this was the only time that it was actually recorded. And I think it's being done this way for two very specific reasons. One is it harkens back to another person who slept during the middle of a storm out on the sea, out and he was running away from God because God told him to go to Nineveh, and he decided not to, so he headed the other direction. Jonah. Jonah was one who was also in the middle of a storm. It's tossing, it's turning. I don't know if that one's being swamped, but alas, Jonah is sleeping. And Jesus even talks about how one greater than Jonah is here, especially in regards to his days and nights in the belly of the fish. So Jesus is in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" I can't prove it, but I feel pretty confident saying this. I have a feeling that this is Peter talking. And the reason why I say that is because isn't that a strange thing to say? Like, you're drowning. The boat is getting totally swamped. It's filled up. There's wind. There's waves. What would you have asked from Jesus? I would have hey, can we have a little help here, please? Like, you know, can you, you know, maybe help us row a little bit, or maybe fix the sail that just broke, or, you know, Jesus, can you help out in this situation? But that's not what this person says. He says something that I think a lot of people say. Do you care if we drown? Now, do you feel the desperation that this person is feeling? And it makes sense. They're in the will of God. They're following after God where he told them to go. They're not expecting the storm to happen. There's other boats that are out there. Add into it that what was about half of the jobs of all of these people that are in the boats, what if half of them are fishermen? How many times have they been on the sea? Who knows how many? They didn't know it was coming, and it's so bad that even it scares the fishermen. To the point that the way this one is recorded, which again, we have very strong evidence that it's Peter dictating to Mark who's writing this, "Do you care if I drown?" Have you ever said that? I know I have. When everything is swirling around, when you have no idea which way is up, the wind hits and it is so hard, you can't see which direction you're heading, the boat is filling up, and all you are doing is crying out, "God, do you care what's happening to me?" That's desperation. I know in other times when things start going bad, when they're kind of mild, we're a little bit more gentle with Jesus, right? We're like going to Jesus in the boat, and we're like, "Excuse me, Jesus, hello, Jesus. Yeah, oh, hi, yeah, Jesus, yeah, thank you for waking up. I was talking with the guys, and I don't know if you can feel it. It's, you know, it's getting a little rocky in here, you know." How many of you are like the polite prayers, right? "Dear Lord, please, please, please help me if it be in your will." We're very polite with God, but this is not a polite prayer at all. This is a prayer of desperation. "God, I'm going to die. And based on all that I'm seeing, you are not present. You do not care. You have abandoned me. And I don't know what to do." When that's the type of storm you end up in, what happens next is extremely helpful for our lives. We see what God does and we see what God says. But probably the more important thing is we see where God is. Because I can promise you, when you feel like all is lost, when you feel that all hope is gone, as we sang in the song, I'm in the middle of all of this. There is one thing that we can always count on. And if you get nothing else from the rest of the sermon, that's fine. You know, what is a squall? How big was the boat? Here's the truth of the text. God will never abandon you. There's no qualifications on that. There is no, "Well, if you do this right or you do this right." It is simply and plainly, you could be in the middle of God's will. You could not see that the storm is coming, and you might have tried everything in your power as a fisherman to stop the storm or get through it, and you are still in way over your head, and nothing is going right. Know this, God is with you. It may feel as if God is asleep. To be honest, I really don't know if Jesus was like literally asleep or like, hey, I've got a newborn kid in my house and they're crying and I don't want to wake up, so I'm going to pretend to be asleep so my wife wakes up and goes and takes care of the kid. Sleep could be one of those. But at any time, is Jesus not in control of the situation? Never. And then we're reminded, especially in the Old Testament, about as the psalmist would cry out, God never slumbers nor sleeps. God is never asleep with you. Now, it may feel like it. And you may be lost and confused. But God is always, always with you. Now, I never push these stories too far because they oftentimes people will try to get something even better from it. Or give hope where maybe the hope isn't there. But it is possible. In this particular instance, spoiler alert, the disciples are all saved, right? Just so you know, Jesus actually saves them all. None of them actually die. But does that happen in real life all the time? No, it doesn't happen all the time. It happens quite frequently. You know, Heather and I were just out at dinner the other night. Last night, we were talking with this young couple, and they were talking about a car accident that they were in. It was really weird as we talked to them, because in that particular instance, God saved my life. God saved Heather's life. Maybe you've been in the middle of a storm and God saved your physical life. Maybe you were in a car accident, or maybe you had a disease, or maybe God saved your marriage. It was falling apart and everything was going bad and God came in and did something miraculous. But I have also seen other times when things did fall apart. And when they fall apart, you might think to yourself, yeah, that's right, because I must be doing something wrong. I am a sinner. God hates me. God is punishing me. God is abandoning me. I am lost. And the answer is no. God is always with you. And there are times when God comes in and does miraculous things. Let me tell you, when that happens, that is some of the most amazing things that I ever see in my entire life. I keep seeing it on Facebook as people post up about certain things, and I go, well, that's a miracle. How did that even happen? That's impossible. There's no way that could have happened. Well, yeah, it can happen because of God. Wait, there's no way that family was going to be saved because, man, they were having so many marital problems. Their relationship was over, and God comes in, and he does something great. We look at people who are completely lost and wandering all over this world, completely out of touch with reality and out of touch with God, and you're like, how is that person saved? And they all of a sudden start talking, you're like, wait a second, you really do know Jesus Christ. This is amazing. God does these things quite frequently. We never, ever, ever should discount them. But I'm never going to tell you that God is going to somehow maybe save your life. Your marriage might not be saved. Your aunt might not be cured. The finances may not actually be there. And it's those times when it gets really desperate and we cry out like this and we say, do you care? And the answer is always emphatically, unequivocally, I am there. So they go, Jesus, the teacher. Yeah, and it's also interesting, why he says teacher, the other ones say master. You know, we're getting the sense with Peter that he's still a little unsure about who he is. Teacher, don't you care if we drown? He got up, this is Jesus, rebuked the wind and said to the waves, quiet! Sorry. Well, it would have been really loud, like there's a windstorm. Like he's got to be super loud, right? Sorry. It's really super loud. Quiet! Be still! The vernacular would be the very... You know, we don't like to teach our kids the shut up phrase, but that's what he's saying. And what is he rebuking? He's rebuking the wind. Yeah, which is, again, that's why I wish they would have, at the early one, a furious squall. It's a megalo windstorm is hitting. And Jesus gets up and rebukes the exact same word that's used many other times in Scripture, specifically in exorcisms. When Jesus is casting out demons, He's rebuking them. So there is some belief, and I'm one of those, that this is one of those demonic storms. I believe that Satan knew if there was ever a time to take Jesus out, wouldn't this be it? I mean, couldn't you just imagine the forces of evil having a great party? They got this windstorm going. It is going swamped. Jesus is asleep, and they're thinking to themselves, that's it. We've drowned God. This is amazing. And then all of a sudden, he gets up and rebukes them and says, stop. And what happens? Yes. Right. Yeah. He's not saying, Father in heaven, there's this big storm that's happening in my life, and can you please cause it to calm? Yeah. So that's one of the reasons why we definitely believe this is a demonic manifestation is coming in. Yeah, he's not rebuking his father. He's not asking his father for a prayer and protection. He's rebuking the wind and the waves. Yeah. And then what happens? After a few hours, the storm finally subsided. No, that would be silly. Though that is what a couple people wrote in some. I read some scholarly journals this week, and they were all garbage. It was terrible. One was like, it said that Jesus got up and said, quiet and be still. And he was saying that to his disciples who were freaking out because Jesus, who had been on shore earlier, knew that the storm was going to come and it was eventually going to, it wasn't going to be a big one. It was going to eventually subside. And he kind of knew that while all the people in the boat probably had no idea how these storms actually worked. And I'm like, oh my gosh, do you not even know what the Bible is? So this is something where he gets up, he rebukes the wind, he rebukes the waves, and instantaneously it ends. Now, I really wish I could, I really wish I had a representation of that. I know that, and I searched for it, there's a video out there. It was shown many years at a national youth gathering, and it had this picture of this storm. And as this storm is raging and it's getting louder and louder, all of a sudden you hear, and I won't yell it, don't worry, yells out, quiet, be still, and then instantaneously it's now calm and serene. What would you do if you were the disciples right at that point? Yeah, you know, think about it. Has anyone in your friend group ever done like a trick shot? You know, like they throw a basketball from full court, or maybe they're trying to do one of those ping pong things where it hits 20 different things before landing into a cup. You know, when someone does something great like that, what do you normally do? Like, we're all giving out high fives. We're all cheering. This is so, you know, I would be cheering Jesus. I'd be like, Jesus, you are the man. Whoa! And then I'd be looking at everyone like, did you see? He got up and he was like, stop it. And the whole thing went quiet. Oh my goodness gracious. Jesus, I'm actually feeling a little hungry. Can you maybe get a fish to jump in the boat? That would be wonderful. I would really appreciate that. Hey, Jesus, we've had really kind of a long night, to be honest, and I'm kind of tired from all this. Can you somehow magically transport us to the other side? That shouldn't be too hard. Or better yet, you seem to control the waves. Get a wave to kind of come right behind us, and then we'll just be like right on it, and we'll be like cowabunga right on in. This would be amazing. What did the disciples do? Oh, I'm sorry, we got to figure out, first of all, what Jesus said to the disciples. Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? Which I believe, because Vicar said this a couple weeks ago, getting Jesus' tone, I think, is kind of hard. We don't really know how he's saying. You know, is he saying it like that? Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? Right? Is that the sound of Jesus? Well, I'm curious, is that how he treats you? You're in the storm, things are bad, everything's falling apart, and you cry out in desperation, and God is just sitting there going, with a disappointing glare. I think we think that's how God looks at us. We're disappointments to God. Because I'm going to be in agreement. I mean, my faith is not as great as this. If I'm in the middle of the storm, usually the first thing I try to do is fix it myself. And then if the storm is not so big, I just try to ride out the storm. But instead, really what I should be doing is going straight to God, but I admit I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed when God comes through for me and I act surprised. Like, oh my gosh, how did that happen? That's incredible. And I'm like, why am I amazed by that? We're talking about God. He's not looking at you disappointed. And then, verse 41, and this is where the title of the sermon comes in. They were terrified and asked each other, who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him. And that word for terrified is actually the word for terrified. And it is very interesting that Jesus calms one storm, but then he causes another storm. Yeah, the disciples, yeah. After all that, again, they're not high-fiving each other. They're not whooping and hollering. They're not asking Jesus for another little magic trick, which would be cool, which is what I would do, which is why I'm not a disciple. Instead, they freak out. This God, this man in front of us is powerful. He controls things. He controls storms. They experienced the presence of God. And when that happens, oftentimes we have only one choice, which is to become terrified, not in a, I'm afraid you're going to squish me like the cockroach that I am. Instead, it is this fearful awe of this person who holds everything together. This is the God that created everything. This is the God who currently holds everything in terms of galaxies and universes together. The vast expanse of this entire world, all the way down to the microscopic cell level that God is intimately involved in, and God is actually interested in you and me. I just find that amazing. I don't know if you're going through a storm, and if you are, I don't know if you're desperate. But I think we've all been there, and if you're not there, you'll be there at some point in your life. There'll be a time when you can't see a way out. Everything is gone. There is no hope left. There is really no reason to live. And you may think that the prayer of crying out, God, do you care about me, is somehow less than what others would do, and you are praying something that Peter himself would have said. God, do you even care? And at that point, Jesus is reminding him, there's one thing that you can always have certainty of and have faith in, and that is my presence with you in the storm. The storm may not stop right away. The storm may radically alter your life. But I will always be with you. And if the storm would even take your life, Jesus says, I'm still going to be with you, no matter what.
I think in today's life, I think that faith is coming back slowly from all the turmoil that's going on. And the Christians are now building once again.
It is incredible to watch what some of it is going on. When I was younger and we planted Searchlight, I think all pastors do this. We all pray for revival. We all want to see people come to faith. And I'm not going to lie, part of me is just a shade bit jealous and upset that it didn't happen earlier when I was a little bit younger. But when you start seeing how God is grabbing hold of younger people, you are all going to be the ones that are going to lead the way because you're finding out who God is. He is massive. He is huge. He is greater than any problem you have. He's greater than any storm you have. He can calm anything, but most importantly, he'll always be with you. And when that revival takes place, it is amazing what can happen. I pray that you, I pray that God causes a storm in your life. Not that you're physically hurt, not that you're desperate in your physical circumstances, but I pray that God causes a storm in your heart that wakes you up, because I fear that so many times it's just literally the other way around. We are the ones that are sleeping. We are the ones that have no idea what's going on. And we are so clueless to all that's happening around us. And that is exactly what happened later on in the story. Years later, there'll be another time when the disciples are fast asleep while Jesus is crying out in pain and misery. And we're reminded that even when we're asleep, God is working. And even when we're not paying attention, God does great things. I think sometimes we need a storm to wake us up. And I pray that it's not bad, so bad for you, but I pray that you have a desperation and a hunger for God, because that's what I'm seeing happening in some other places, and it's pretty exciting. And I pray that as you go through those things in life, please remember this: God is always with you, period. We pray. Father, I know that storms